This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by Social Brand Forum 2016. This industry-leading digital marketing experience brings the best and brightest thought leaders like Jay Baer, Jenny Dietrich, and Joe Polizzi to the heart of the heartland for 2 days of insightful keynotes and tactical how-tos. Get the best rate when you register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is David Meerman Scott. David is an internationally acclaimed strategist whose books and blog are must-reads for professionals seeking to generate attention in a way that grows their business. Scott's advice and insights help people, products, and organizations stand out, get noticed, and capture hearts and minds. He is author or co-author of 10 books. Three are international bestsellers. The New Rules of Marketing and PR, now in its fifth edition, has been translated into 26 languages and is used as text in hundreds of universities and business schools worldwide. It is a modern business classic with over 350,000 copies sold so far. Scott also authored Real-Time Marketing and PR, a Wall Street Journal bestseller, Newsjacking, Worldwide Rave, and the new hit book, The New Rules of Sales and Service. He also co-authored Marketing the Moon, now in pre-production as a feature-length film titled The Men Who Sold the Moon, and Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. David, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. And the last time we saw each other in the flesh was in sunny Stockholm, wasn't it?
Sunny Stockholm, which was kind of going back and forth on it. I remember the weather was nicer at that time there than it was back in the States, which I...
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, but wasn't that a great event?
It was a wonderful event. Email marketing evolved by the smart folks at Apsis. So that was... That was all kinds of fun, and got to hear you speak. And I always love when I can do that too. When there's someone awesome opening the event up.
Well, vice versa. First time I had heard you speak, so it's a mutual admiration society, my friend.
Well, you know, I have to talk about New Rules, because as I was reading that bio, talking about it being a text in hundreds of universities and business schools worldwide, I have to kind of start in reverse with a shout out. My wife is getting her master's in strategic communication from Washington State University, and lo and behold, getting her books for this semester. And actually, I saved her a book because I said, I have that one. But
that's awesome. I love that. I love stories like that. It's fantastic. I mean, who would have thought the first edition of this book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, I was writing in 2005 and 2006, so literally 10 years ago, which is remarkable. When the book came out, everyone ignored it. The universities ignored it. I should say all the powers that be ignored it. The universities ignored it. Ad agencies ignored it. all of the associations like the Public Relations Society of America, they all ignored this book. except entrepreneurs who said, holy cow, this is helping my business. These ideas are amazing. Pushed it onto the bestseller lists. I was on the Business Week bestseller list for 6 months. And so now, of course, I have to keep updating it. We're now into the fifth edition. But it's remarkable how we've come around now to it actually being accepted by like universities like Washington State. That's remarkable to me. It's like, wow, you know, how the hell did that happen? I've never taken a marketing course in my life. So it is kind of cool to hear stories like that. So thanks for letting me know.
Yeah. Well, and what is it that you think it has, you know, I'm sure you've thought and overthought, especially in the context of everything else you've written. What do you think makes that one stand out in the canon of David Meerman Scott?
I wish I knew the answer to that because I've written 7 books since, and all of my 9 other books have sold fewer copies than that one book. So I wish I knew the answer to that. But what I think it is, Nick, is that I had the right book at the right time. The New Rules of Marketing and PR was essentially the first book that ever talked about the ideas of things that we now call inbound marketing, the things that we now call content marketing, although I did write a book about content marketing 2 years before this book. It was probably the first book that really spoke about social media marketing, although that's not a term I used, but it really was. And so I think people like you, people like me, and marketers and entrepreneurs were aware that something was out there because the ways that we buy products and services had fundamentally changed by 2005, 2006. You know, we were going to Google. We were looking on the web for answers. Yet businesses were still marketing in the old ways. They were spending a gazillion dollars on advertising. They were interrupting people with their messages. They were trying to get the media to talk about them. And so I was the first book that came out that said, hey, you know what? There's a new way. You can create content that gets indexed by the search engines. You can reach buyers directly without having to spend money on advertising, without having to convince the media that you're worthy of their attention. And so I think had the book come out 2 years later, someone else would have been first. And I think being first was a really big benefit. It sort of continues to sell as a result of everyone who has already read it. And it sold 350,000 copies so far in English, and it's in 28 other languages, last count. And so I think that kind of just continues to drive it. I'm also, I think, because I do update it every 2 years, and now we're in the fifth edition, which came out in October 2015. I think that I've managed to keep it current. I remember when the first edition came out, Twitter didn't exist. As I was writing the book, and as I was writing, it didn't exist. But then once it actually came out and was available in bookstores, when this was pre-Kindle, so it's physical bookstores, people would email me and say, dude, there's this thing called Twitter. How come you didn't put it in your book? And I'm like, well, because it didn't exist when I was writing it. It really annoyed me. So in any case, in every single edition, there's, you know, something new that pops up that I have to write about. So for the most recent edition, I spent a lot of time talking about these new streaming video services like Periscope. That's the new thing since the fourth edition, as the fifth edition.
So do you find in updating that, you know, now in its fifth edition, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
Do you find that there are exactly what you said, where you've got sort of channels and platforms that are changing, but are kind of the tent poles, the kind of bones of the book, the overall approach, something that you call timeless?
They are exactly the same. Exactly the same. I mean, the ways that I articulated what's changed, the ways that I articulated how you create a strategy has not changed at all. And basically the idea is that the old rules were that you had to spend a whole lot of money on advertising, you had to convince the media to broadcast or write about you, or you had to, you know, do sales one at a time, cold calling or whatever it might be. The new rules being that you can publish directly, you can create content on the web and push it out there, you can engage people through social networks, you can be a real-time marketer putting stuff out right now that has effect, that affects people right now. And those, none of those things have changed. And although I've focused more attention on real time over the last few editions, as you so eloquently described them, the tent poles really have remained the same.
So in thinking about your new rules of marketing and PR, new rules of sales and service, and talking kind of through the lens of brand, are there new rules of branding?
Well, I think that the idea of branding, to me, you know, there's all sorts of different definitions of branding, yeah, as we all know. But, you know, for to take a really broad approach of what is branding is, you know, essentially how does a company relate to its public? How does a company outward face and then have people engage, and then the collective wisdom of all those people become the brand? I think the biggest change I've seen, and it's a huge one, is the rise of real-time and instant engagement. And what I mean by that is you can think of a lot of old line brands, you know, whatever it was, brands that have been timeless, sort of timeless classics, you know, I don't know, whatever, Coca-Cola or IBM, and, you know, other brands that continuously are, you know, near the top of these lists. They've all become really famous over time by doing things that really aren't real time. You know, they've spent a lot of money on advertising. They've had armies of salespeople. They've had huge investments in agencies and other forms of public relations to get the media to do things. But recently, I think that the idea of what you can do instantly on the web has meant that the idea of how you go about branding can be completely and utterly different. And I dare do it, but I will. Going into the realm of politics, because I know you are a proud Iowan, and I'm from Boston, just south of New Hampshire, and we're recording this podcast, we're in the thick of the presidential primary season, so you can't help it but escape where you live and where I live, the fact that people are focused on getting these votes in Iowa and New Hampshire. And in fact, as we're speaking right now, I'm planning on going to one of the rallies. Actually, it's one of the town halls when the candidates. I actually go to a number of different candidates, not because I support them, because I think it's a fascinating marketing thing. But Donald Trump, I mean, I'm not suggesting in any way that I do or don't support Donald Trump, because I don't talk about politics from the perspective of the politics aspects. But the branding that Donald Trump has managed to do, in my view, is 100% because he's focused on real time. You know, another candidate will say something, Donald is out within hours talking about it. You know, if something happens in the debate and people say something about Donald Trump, he's the next day from the stump, he's talking about it. More so, I believe, than other candidates. I actually did an analysis of Donald Trump's social media. He is by far more engaged than anybody else on social media. On Twitter, he's tweeting much more often. He's tweeting much more timely. He's tweeting real things and in many cases engaging people, where most of the other candidates are using it as a broadcast medium. It's really fascinating to me to see that one particular candidate is much more engaged in real time. And it's not surprising to me, strictly from the marketing perspective, not from a political perspective, that he's leading in the polls. It's not surprising to me, because I believe that he's figured out how to brand in this world in a new way, and that is to focus on real time. And I know that, Nick, that you know about my concept, which I call newsjacking, which is the art and science of injecting your ideas into a breaking news story. Newsjacking is an amazing thing that anybody can do if you follow the news and you understand how a news story breaks, it's always in sort of a bell-shaped curve, and you create a piece of content on the web at the precise moment that people are interested in a news topic, you have a chance to get quoted in news stories. You have a chance to generate attention from people who might buy your products and services. It's a really remarkable way to generate attention. And in fact, I just released a new online course called Master Newsjacking, and it's at newsjacking.com. But the idea of newsjacking, Donald Trump's figured that out. You know, when something is happening in the news, he's all over it. He is commenting on his on what he thinks is going on in the news. And it just, you see it all the time if you just look at his social feeds. So I think, yes, there is a new approach to branding, and it is understanding real time. It's understanding what's happening today. And so there you have it. Somebody who's praising Donald Trump, but again, not from the perspective of his politics. I'm not planning on talking about my politics, but I do talk a lot about the marketing aspects of the presidential campaign. Man, I just spoke for like half of our entire podcast on that one question. I'm sorry, Nick. What do you think about
you wrote
the whole idea of real time and the whole idea of our interesting candidate here, Mr. Trump?
Well, I was thinking you also wrote a post on that, didn't you? I did
a really pretty extensive analysis of all of the Republican candidates at that time. It was a couple of months ago. And Donald Trump was by far and away more engaged than I think the next five or six candidates put together. And again, it's not surprising to me that then he becomes a leader, because he is the most engaged.
Well, and I think that's why I was joking before we hit record that I'm a political junkie, again, partially related to where I live. But I am, as a marketer and an educator, I do think there's some interesting case studies. I think because the objective is so clear, it's not murky, like what we're after as a business, you know, votes and primaries and caucus turnout, you know, the call to action is pretty clear.
Yeah.
The timetable is extremely short. And, you know, it's very dependent on new concepts, new dynamics, and new media. I think that since the 2008 Obama campaign, I mean, I think that was a huge social media digital marketing case study that I remember talking about quite a bit, you know, trying to be as apolitical as possible. But there were some amazing lessons to harness there. And I think that, you know, like you said, politics aside, I think you can't ignore kind of the mechanics behind why Trump is able to do what he's doing.
I absolutely agree with that. And for the last one, two, three, I guess four cycles, I've been intrigued in particular by one candidate each time. Howard Dean first. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first candidates to embrace blogging. And I've actually become friends with Nico Mele, who is essentially his blogger. And Nico shared wonderful stories about how he got Howard Dean into blogging, and how he got Howard Dean into online marketing. And that was way back in that was 2004, right?
Yeah.
And then you're right. And then Barack Obama in 2008 and in 2012 did a really interesting job with social media, because by then Twitter was out and a number of different things. I remember where I really thought, wow, there's something going on here, was when Barack Obama announced Joe Biden as his running mate on Twitter first, before any other medium at all, before he called the New York Times, before he or his people called the New York Times, before they put it on their website, before they did anything else. A minute or two before, the first place they broke that news was Twitter. It's like, wow, that's cool. Something's going on here. And that was 2008. I mean, that was a long time ago. And in internet life, that's like 100 dog years, isn't it? And now we've got Donald Trump. So I'm absolutely fascinated with what Donald Trump is doing. And there's no question. I mean, Howard Dean did not get elected, but he certainly got noticed in a way that he wasn't as a candidate using the old techniques. And now And now we've got our friend Donald Trump doing an interesting job. I think to a certain degree Bernie Sanders too, but I think Donald Trump is really doing the best job.
You know, you made the point about Howard Dean not winning, and I remember following him as well. And I always kind of give that campaign the credit for none of the other stuff that we're talking about happens without that. I think that was kind of the first ice-breaking new media campaign.
It was. And it was pre-social because Facebook didn't exist, I don't think. And if it did, it was only for students. Twitter didn't exist. YouTube had just started. But the big medium was blogging. And they totally embraced blogging. They actually at one time had a full-time blogger either as a paid staffer or as a volunteer on the Howard Dean campaign for every single state in the U.S. And that's remarkable. That was 2004. That was really early.
Yeah, and it was blogging. It was Meetup and email. Pretty aggressive email in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, and like you said, you're on your way to an event tonight. And when this show goes up, if my calculations are correct, it should be the day of the Iowa caucuses, February 1st. So we'll see.
Ooh, how interesting is that?
Yeah, so we'll see kind of where the rubber meets the road and how many Iowans come out to caucus with their friends and neighbors and see, because that's kind of it's an interesting, because I think that was the thing with Howard Dean as well that I think Obama did, is kind of the connection of online engagement to offline action and activity, which I think was a challenge for Dean, but the shoe leather side of things, the Obama campaign seemed to have a little more figured out.
I think they did a really good job, so.
So, and that's, I think a really big struggle too. I mean, even for businesses is converting online activity to offline interaction and engagement where it's needed as well.
Oh, I think it is. I think it is. And especially for those organizations that offline is really important for them. And I think in almost every case that I sort of look at, it seems like people are under-investing in the online world and over-investing in the offline world. I still think, I mean, we're 10 years into this now. I still think that a lot of companies are still sort of treating it as if nothing's going on, that people aren't going to Google first or asking their friends and colleagues on using electronic media first, or the fact that there's more people on this planet that own a mobile phone that's connected in some way to the internet than own a toothbrush. I mean, we're going through a revolution right now. And I know you know this, but there's so many business people who for whatever reason don't understand that we're going through a communications revolution right now. And they over time will suffer if they're not suffering already. And it's so obvious, I think, to all of us who are in this world, but to people who aren't in this world, who've, never really had to relate to these ideas in the past, whether they're a real estate agent or the CEO of a company, whatever it might be. I mean, we really need to continue to be on our horse talking about how important it is to understand what's going on in the online world.
So, you and I are both political junkies and also music fans, and we've certainly seen some losses here in the first month of the new year. But
yeah, we have, haven't we? David Bowie and a number of others, yeah.
And in thinking about that and knowing that we were going to talk about newsjacking, it occurred to me that are there times – well, what are the rules of when to newsjack and when not to? Because I'm thinking about that in the context of Crocs, the rubber shoes that sometimes people love to hate on. And one of those most recent times was early in the breaking of the David Bowie story.
Yeah, right.
There was a tweet that's since been deleted that's many piled on. And I wanted to get your take on, is there a time to newsjack and a time not to? And what's the best kind of summary of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, there is no question that there is. Generally, if the story in the news has any kind of negative connotation, you have to be cautious. If the news story is clearly negative, in other words, a death and destruction, you have to be extremely careful. And I would argue you need to have a legitimate tie to that story. So, for example, with David Bowie, there's, as far as I know, there's no legitimate tie between Crocs and David Bowie.
I would be surprised if such a thing existed.
Yeah, right, exactly. However, if David Bowie, and I don't know the answer to this question, but if David Bowie played Fender guitars, it would could be appropriate, I say could be, not would be, could be appropriate for Fender guitars to do something to honor the fact that David Bowie played their instruments, as long as it was classy and felt like it was a legitimate tie between Fender guitars and David Bowie. That would be okay. I mean, and I'll give you a concrete example of something that happened. I mean, a couple of years ago now, but Hurricane Sandy came up through the U.S. East Coast, and there were a number of brands that tried to newsjack that. Among them, American Apparel that put out a Hurricane Sandy sale, so that if you lived in the states affected by Hurricane Sandy, you could take 20% off your order, and it was, you know, kind of a flagrant way to try to make money off of a storm that killed over 100 people, that did well over $1 billion in property damage, that left thousands of people homeless. I mean, it's just nutty. And they had no legitimate tie to the story. It was just brazen. However, Duracell, the battery manufacturer, also Hurricane Sandy, they also did something, but what they did was classy and had a legitimate tie to the story. What they did is they have these trucks that run mobile charging stations, and they ran these trucks to the areas affected by Hurricane Sandy that were without power, and for free, no charge, they would charge your mobile phone, no charge, at no monetary cost. They would charge your mobile phone for you, your iPad, your tablet, your computer, whatever it is. They would charge it up for you, and they'd also gave out free batteries, because they knew that if you had a mobile phone, you could be in contact with other people, assuming the cell towers were up, and they wanted to make sure that everybody had access. So they were off giving free charges and free batteries. Now, that was seen as incredibly positive, because a battery manufacturer has a legitimate tie to the story, and what they were doing and giving people free charges and free batteries was seen as classy and appropriate. So they got actually really good notice for pushing their brand into Hurricane Sandy, whereas American Apparel, just trying to make money on a Hurricane Sandy sale, was seen as inappropriate. So I would say you need a legitimate tie to the story, and you need to be extremely careful if the story has any strong negative connotations.
Well, I think that's so important too, because I think many would kind of nod along to you talking about, you know, the example of embracing real time and newsjacking, even like a brand like Trump, but then would see the Crocs thing and then say, you know what, it's best not to, because they can't see that distinction. So I think, you know, as you said in your definition of newsjacking, it really is an art and science.
It is. It is an art and science, because you can't really automate it. You have to, every time there's a news story, you have to say to yourself, okay, is there a legitimate tie? How can I create a story that's going to add value? And then you need to push it out really quickly. And that's not something you can automate. But at the same time, you can automate how you monitor the news to find stories and figure out whether it is going to be a story that's appropriate to you.
And as we start to wrap up, as someone that is responsible for the new rules and keeping them up to date, what are you keeping your eye on in the new year?
So I've been fascinated recently with how marketing and sales is converging on the web. So I wrote, as we've talked about a number of times, New Rules of Marketing and PR, but I also wrote a book called The New Rules of Sales and Service, which is applying some of these similar ideas to the sales area. And so what's interesting to me is that, and I'm trying to find really good examples of this, they're few and far between actually, is when the exact same piece of content, maybe it's a YouTube video or a blog post or an infographic, is brilliantly used both as a marketing asset as well as a sales asset. Now, let me give you my definitions of how they're different. In an online world, marketing, in my mind, is when you use a piece of content to reach many people at once. And in an online world, sales is when you use a piece of online content to reach one buyer at a time, and the salesperson that provides that information puts that piece of content into context. So I'm fascinated by how a YouTube video or a blog post or an infographic or a slideshow, whatever the piece of content is, can be pushed out to multiple people at once in what we would traditionally call marketing, but that exact same piece of content, if it's shared individually to one buyer at a time by the salespeople, also becomes a sales asset. And I'd like to kind of figure out who does that well and how that can kind of be taught as a technique. And I'm still kind of thinking about it and haven't really figured out, you know, here are the 89 steps you need to go through to make this work.
but it is currently marinating, and
probably it is. And another aspect of that, which is important, is that the current Salesforce automation and CRM system, customer relationship management systems that are out there, are not optimized for this at all, because most of those systems were built before the new rules. I don't mean my book, but before the idea of people making their own buying decisions based on what happens on their Google searches or based on what happens by interacting on social networks with their friends and colleagues and family members and other people. So what's interesting to me about this concept of content being a tool for both marketing and sales is that I don't know that there are very many places that has become part of the routine that the company as a whole uses, for the simple reason that most but not all of the systems that are in place within companies are not optimized to do so. So it seems like there's something interesting that could potentially go on there if companies kind of start to get it right. And I think HubSpot's getting it right. I'm biased because I'm on their board of advisors. I know the CEO of HubSpot, Brian Halligan, really well, since we wrote a book together called Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. But I think they're getting it right. They understand how sales and marketing are working together, and they have tools to get content out there. But I think there are a lot of those kinds of tools that are missing that.
Awesome. Awesome. Keeping an eye on what's to come there. And finally, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
A brand that has made me smile. Holy cow, Nick, aren't you an interesting asker of questions? Okay, so you're a music fan. I'm a music fan. In December last month, I saw Miley Cyrus backed by the Flaming Lips. And Miley Cyrus is a brand, and she just makes me smile, man. It was a fantastic show. It was in a club. It was in the House of Blues in Boston. Small club, 2,000 people or whatever it holds. And I got there reasonably early. I was way up front in the mosh pit. And there we have Miley Cyrus backed by the Flaming Lips. It was pretty darned awesome. She's very successfully broken out of the Disney world that made her famous and made herself even more famous by establishing a really interesting brand, by the way, through social media, and now is very much doing extremely well as a result of that. And by the way, she's a fantastic singer.
Awesome. That is a great answer. I knew we'd
You didn't think I would choose Miley Cyrus for that answer to that question.
I knew we'd get something that the likes of which we haven't gotten before, and you would be the first on Miley Cyrus. Well played.
Excellent.
Where do we want to send folks to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Google my full name to get all of my various coordinates, David Meerman Scott. But I'm just fascinated by this idea of newsjacking that we talked about a number of moments ago, and that's newsjacking.com.
Awesome. Awesome. We will link up to all of that in the show notes. David, thanks for joining us on Brand.
My pleasure, Nick, and good luck in your caucuses.
Thank you. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. I want to give a shout out to Leah Hensel, who just listened to our episode with Drew McClellan and posted a really awesome quote, a social graphic from that. Leah, thanks for listening. And if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, be sure to give a holler using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right on the show. You can find links to everything we talked about at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over, give us a rating and review, help others find the show. And finally, a reminder that On Brand is brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Polizzi, Ginny Dietrich, and more here in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using the promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.